Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
After reviewing the play, the call on the ice stands. We got to go.
Okay, fellas, we are set to go.
Let's roll, boys. Come on, let's get going.
We are kicking.
Here we go.
Both guys, 5 minutes each for fighting.
Watch the blue.
Play the puck.
We're not doing this.
After further review, it's the Scouting the Refs podcast.
Yeah, baby.
Here's your hosts, Todd Lewis and Josh Smith.
Okay, gentlemen, play ball. Let's go.
All right, guys, let's drop the puck.
Josh, I think to myself about this podcast that we've been doing for several years now. We're really just a simple show with simple people that want to understand what should be simple rules, but it doesn't always work that way, does it?
No, the rule book's not simple. The decisions aren't simple. There's a whole lot that goes into it. But sometimes you just want to talk hockey. You just want it to all make sense.
And that's it. We're just looking for a little clarity. We see something and we think that something logical should happen moving forward. But it doesn't always work out that way, I don't think.
No, the rule book's not always logical. And there's always interpretations and there's always judgment calls. But there is, Todd. There is a logic there somewhere, I promise.
The rule book may be in black and white, but there is always interpretation, which creates a gray area. This is the Scouting the Refs podcast. Please make sure you follow the social channels. You'll find Josh at Scouting the Refs on both X and Instagram. You'll find me at Todd Lewis Sports again on both X and Instagram. Coming up on this week's episode, fines to pay, whack-a-mole, good hit, bad hit, I don't know what kind of hit, a three-game hit, and hey, put that net back. Intriguing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. The net moving is probably more intriguing than some of these hits, which were a little more painful to watch.
Okay. Let's give some props to former NHL referee Tom Cowell, who will be entering the BC Hockey Hall of Fame in the near future as part of the 2024 class. Congratulations to Tom. It's nice to see officials recognized for their big contributions to the game as well.
Yeah, Tom, many, many years in the game now, currently working over in Europe, but he spent quite a long time in stripes. He will become the eighth NHL official in the BC Hockey Hall of Fame. You've got guys that you've known for years, like Lonnie Cameron, Jay Scharer, Shane Heyer, Brad Lazarowicz, Rob Schick, back a few more years for Bob Hall and Lloyd Gilmore, but nice honor for Tom to make it in there. And I hope to be catching up with him shortly. A little teaser for us, Todd, but I think we'll be able to chat with Tom a little bit about what it means to join the Hockey Hall of Fame or the BC Hockey Hall of Fame and maybe some stories about all those NHL games he's worked.
I look forward to that. I'm hitting you with this blind, but do you know off the top of your head how many officials are in the Hockey Hall of Fame? Because I suspect it's not enough.
Not as many as there should be. There are a handful of guys in there. It's been a while. The most recent official that was inducted, Bill McCreary, and that's been some time. So we've had a quite some time since we've had somebody in. I think McCreary was probably 2013, 2014. Before that, I know we had Scampi, Andy Van Helleman, John D'Amico. So not enough. I think there are probably some well-deserving officials that have not been put into the Hockey Hall of Fame. And I know one for political reasons. The all-time leader in NHL games officiated is Kerry Fraser. He's worked more than anyone else in the National Hockey League. I know he's butt heads with NHL bosses. I know he and Colin Campbell had some issues back in the day, but it's amazing that Fraser is still not in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Seems like he would be a slam dunk.
Do you know what we need for the Hockey Hall of Fame? And I don't think this will ever happen, but you know how every couple of years there's sort of a push for veterans who have been missed over and you have kind of a rush of goaltenders that get put in or a rush of players from a certain era. I find it hard to believe, though, that voting members will say, hey, you know what we need? More referees that called penalties against us. And that's unfortunate.
You're right. I think more referees is rarely anything that former players or current players want is more referees, more officials. But I'd like to see, and I know it won't happen, but a little more bite my tongue on the word here. I'd like to see a little more transparency around how the whole process works, because we know that, you know, there's a certain process by which guys are nominated, and somebody on the committee has to bring it to the floor, and then they put it to a vote. I would be shocked if Fraser weren't nominated at some point. And if he weren't, how can we get that nomination out there and then find out who is it that's voting against this guy? I mean, look, whatever you think about what he's done, he's the record holder for most games officiated. And I think it's really hard to overlook that. So I don't know what personal grudges are out there. Some transparency might help with that a little bit. It'd also make it interesting, Todd.
It certainly would. Lots to debate there for sure. Okay, let's get to some of this week's business. And the business was a $2,000 transaction, e-transfer from Michael McCarron and from Mats Zuccarello of the Nashville Predators and Minnesota Wild, respectively, for unsportsmanlike conduct. Shenanigans would perhaps also be appropriate. I know, use whatever term you like.
Yeah, I'd say that's absolutely accurate. Some shenanigans. And in this case, you're looking at something where you've got guys interacting with guys on the bench. So you're the Wild, the Preds coming together for a big scrum here. And where this tips the scales into what ended up being a fine is Zuccarello at the far right there grabs McCarron from the bench and McCarron returns a punch. So you've got a guy on the bench interacting with a guy on the ice. And that's something that the NHL doesn't typically want to see. Zuccarello getting the worst of it right there.
Yeah, that's when if you're on the bench and interacting, I love that. That's a very political term. Interacting with someone on the ice, that is going to be frowned upon. So understandable that the fine comes from the league office. This is not something that they want to just let go or let slide. They have to recognize this.
No, and we saw penalties to both guys, minor penalties. This isn't anything that's worse than a fine, but just one of those messages that needs to be sent that reminds guys on the bench, like, don't grab a hold of a guy on the ice. Don't get involved in the action on the ice. It's not as bad as leaving the bench to join an altercation. It's nothing to that extreme, but yeah, keep your hands to yourself.
There you go. I have another game situation that, again, maybe should have been acknowledged, recognized, and a message sent, so to speak. This has to do with the Colorado Avalanche and Chicago Blackhawks game, where Connor Bedard, the rookie sensation who has already endured a broken jaw this year, is skating out of the zone, nowhere near the puck, but Avalanche defenseman Josh Manson gets him in his sights and gives him a nice two-hander right on the wrist above the glove where he knows it's going to hurt. Now, there was no penalty call on this play. And okay, I understand that. But isn't this something that should be reprimanded in some way, shape, or form?
Look, it's well deserving of a penalty. It's a clear slash. Like you said, it's a two-hander to the wrist. There's nothing else going on. These guys aren't doing anything. There's no fight. There's no shoving. There's no altercation. It's purely Bedard skating away and Manson whacks him from behind and chops him right on the wrist there. So I would like to see it called. I understand that there are certain situations where infractions get missed on the ice. So we'll give the officials a pass here for whatever reason, but it certainly deserves a penalty. The problem is, after the fact, player safety has all the opportunity in the world to take a look at this, and I don't know how you don't issue a fine. I mean, $5,000 isn't going to keep Manson up at night, but it is going to send a message that, hey, this is something that you can't do. We got you. You know, we busted you for it. Yes, you got away with it during the game, but we need to protect star players. We can't have guys slashing away from the puck, away from the play. There's nothing to do with hockey in this instance. The only intent Manson has there is to intimidate Bedard, to send a message to say, you know, we're out here to hurt you and to inflict injury, however severe, on a star player. So I'm absolutely amazed that player safety didn't come down with at least a fine. This is not a one-game suspension, but this does deserve a fine, even if it's only to acknowledge the fact that this is something that the league doesn't want to tolerate. I'm amazed that that didn't happen that way, Todd.
And isn't this something that, if he were to have been fined here, would be noted in any future action or interaction with the Department of Player Safety if he were to have a hearing in the future?
Absolutely. You have two facets to that. He becomes a repeat offender if there's something else within the 18 months following the incident, which only affects really salary calculations. If you're a repeat offender, you lose more salary when you get suspended, basically. The other piece is that player safety will refer back to it. Now, they can look back and they can see that Manson did this. This has been logged by the league, and player safety looks at a player's entire history, including penalties, suspensions, fines, and even offenses like this that may not have resulted in a penalty or a fine. they can refer back to it. They can consider it. You know, if Manson gets suspended for a slash in the near future, they're certainly going to call back to this one and say, hey, this isn't the first time. But acknowledging it with a fine or some disciplinary action certainly puts a little more weight behind it.
All the lovers of old-time hockey got their wish last weekend when Ryan Reeves of the Toronto Maple Leafs and Matt Rempe of the New York Rangers had a big fight at center ice. But there are no stage fights anymore, right, Josh? Everything's all organic now. This just happens in the game, doesn't it? That's the way this works?
Yeah, nobody's going out there planning a fight. Nobody's having discussions before the opening face-off, you know, during warm-ups with the opposing team of trying to posture for a fight. That doesn't happen at all, Ty. Right, that certainly hasn't happened with Rempe in prior games.
No, okay. I just wanted to be sure. A little bit earlier in this game, Rempe did take a run at the newly acquired Ilya Lyubushkin of the Toronto Maple Leafs into the boards, though. There was no penalty. There was no fine or suspension or hearing or anything like that. But I watched this a bunch of times, and it seemed like Matt Rempe took an awful lot of steps before having contact with Lyubushkin, and I thought there should have been a charging penalty.
I could see that. I don't think you're anything more than a minor on this one. It's nothing severe, but it's some strong strides. He's hitting him high. Looks like he leaves his feet right before the collision. So you're hitting a few of the marks, any of which would be enough to justify a charging minor, and he hit a few there. So I thought that one was deserving of a minor. Again, nothing more than 2 minutes, but that was a penalty-worthy hit.
Again, it's just, I'm surprised. But let's get to another game now that also had a couple of hits that got plenty of attention, and both involved Martin Prospecil of the Calgary Flames. So in the game against the Seattle Kraken, the first hit delivered by Prospecil against Adam Larson was kind of from the side. He targeted him again. There was no call on the play, but I thought this was also deserving of a penalty of some sorts.
Yeah, that looked like boarding to me. I mean, he's coming in. He's looking at the numbers on the way in. He has an opportunity to deliver a legal hit. And some folks were complaining that, you know, this is a legal hit. It's shoulder on shoulder. It is. There's shoulder on shoulder is not the issue. We're not talking an illegal check to the head here. We're talking about contact with a player that results in him making violent contact with the boards. I think this was a textbook boarding call. I'm surprised. Again, much like with the Rempe hit, I don't think we're looking at more than a minor penalty, but this is definitely a hit that deserves a penalty. So Pospisil should have sat for two. Again, don't think we're looking at a major here, but one that should have been a penalty.
One of the other elements that was pointed out is that approaching from the side is not a negative, or it's allowed as in terms of the rules. There's the blindside phrase has come out of the NHL rule book, but again, that's not the issue. It's how the hit was delivered and the result of the contact from Larson hitting the boards.
Right. And that's what you're looking at on the penalty here. Again, it's not a hit from behind. We're not calling this a hit from behind. We're not calling it a legal check to the head. It's boarding because of the way he drives Larson into the boards. I mean, if you want to argue how much was Larson defenseless on this play, he's playing the puck. He's positioned at probably a pretty dangerous spot off the boards there, but that's where the onus is on Pospisil to not drive the guy's head neck first into the boards there, which he did. So I thought it was a dangerous play. I think it's one of those where you're lucky that you didn't have a severe injury coming out of this one. But this is not a hit from behind. Doesn't have to be. You don't have to hit through the numbers for boarding. You can hit a guy from the sides and drive him dangerously into the boards like Pospisil did.
Another example, same game, same hitter, different victim this time. It's Vince Dunn with the puck, and he has his back facing outward from the boards, and Pospisil sees him, has plenty of time to let up, to change his angle of approach, but instead drills him face first into the dasher. It's a choice. I guess you can go one way or the other, but that's what he chose. The Department of Player Safety chose to have a hearing with him after his penalties got him tossed from the game, and they have suspended him an additional 3 games. Adequate, appropriate, seems like this is pretty consistent, if you will, with player safety.
Yeah, I can't really argue this one. This was a far more egregious of a hit. I mean, they're both rough to watch, but when it comes to checking from behind, he had numbers all the way. I mean, Dunn starts to shift his body at the last second, but that doesn't absolve Pospisil of the responsibility of delivering a clean body check. And I thought player safety brought up a good point when you watched the video back. Watch Pospisil's skates. his one skate ends up between Dunn's skates, which just kind of shows you that the train tracks that he was on when he went to deliver the hit. You know, he's coming straight in. His focus and his line of attack, his angle, was always going straight through the numbers on Dunn. So, again, this is a scary hit. One delivered dangerously near the boards, one that's from behind on a player who really, I don't think Dunn sees him coming at all. So I think three games is correct. And it's worth noting that player safety is not looking at the Larson hit from earlier in the game. The officials, they're not either. You're calling each hit on the merits of the hit itself. So just because they said, oh, there was a bad hit earlier, you can't give him more for this particular hit. And player safety can't give him a lengthier suspension necessarily just because of this hit. They need to look at, is this a suspendable offense? And then what's the player's history? So we're typically not seeing it happen in the same game for player safety. You know, maybe that does make the difference from 2 to 3, but when it comes to the officials on the ice, they have to issue the penalties and make the calls based on the hit itself. So interesting that we had two similarly dangerous, similarly penalty worthy hits. This one gets three games.
Understandable that as well. You consider the offense. It's not, oh, well, this one didn't look great. You're penalizing the offense. It's not, that would be unfair to look at other hits and say, oh, well, we didn't like that one either, so we're giving you more.
Right. And I think also the injury side of things, you know, we always want players to get a more severe penalty when a guy's injured on a play, but sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes the player receiving the hit is fortunate that they avoided a serious injury, but that shouldn't make it less severe on the guy who delivered the hit. A hit that is equally dangerous, that is has equal potential to cause an injury, just because you avoid injury doesn't mean you get off the hook there. So player safety looks at injury, but only to add length to the suspension. They're not looking at a play and saying, well, there was no injury, we shouldn't suspend the guy. They're looking at the hit, deciding if that hit was worthy of a suspension, and then they factor in, well, was there an injury? And if there was an injury, maybe we tack on another game.
Good point, because Dunn did pop up afterwards, which was good to see. All right, Devils and Ducks, a late game scramble with New Jersey trying to tie the game. Anaheim's Frank Vatrana just happens to nudge the net off the pegs, and it negated a scoring chance. Referee Frederick Lecuyer blows the whistle and calls for a penalty shot. It's just a coincidence. I just accidentally brushed by. It's just a flesh wound. I barely touched the thing.
Oh man, it was. When I first saw it, I said, oh, what happened? There is a player on the net. Then you see it afterwards, and it's so obvious. It's hysterically funny how Vatrana really just goes in to knock the net off. In most cases, you know what? It's fine. You're going to draw a penalty for doing it. In the final 2 minutes of the game, it results in a penalty shot. So we don't see this rule called every day. We don't see guys knocking the net off deliberately every day. But it's one of those few rules that if there is insufficient time in regulation or any point in overtime, it results in a penalty shot. And I think Vatrana afterwards said it was an instinctive play. He really didn't think it through. He knows the rule, and he saw, as he pushed the net off, he saw that the puck was already behind the net. So he admitted that it didn't even really save him. They weren't going to have time to score the goal. So a close one there.
Well, and it's still a play that you may want to consider at some point. Look, if the play is inevitable that the puck is going to likely wind up in your net, knock the net off and take your chances with the penalty shot.
Hey, if you think your goalie has a chance at stopping the penalty shot, or a better chance than stopping what might have been a wide open net there, then absolutely go for it. I know some Ducks fans were frustrated too because the goaltender's mask was off. And when you look back at it, you can see that the mask was off after the play had already been blown dead. But even if it's not, it's not an immediate whistle. And you have to remind folks sometimes that goaltenders sometimes are forced to play without a mask. It is not an immediate stoppage of play. If the other team, as the Devils did, has an impending or immediate scoring chance, we play on, even if the goaltender's missing his helmet. So he lost it after the play was dead. But even if he hadn't, this is a situation where the Devils may have been firing a shot from the blue line at that net with Dostal's mask off.
Oh, yeah, that would have been something to see. You did point out as well that there are a couple of key elements that make this a penalty shot. And that also kind of comes into play in terms of the Toronto-New York game that we mentioned a little bit earlier with a too many men on the ice penalty. There were some that thought that there should have been a penalty shot awarded here, but that's not really the case.
It's not. And it's because there is a difference between too many men on the ice and what is called a deliberate illegal substitution. What we saw from the Rangers was a sloppy change. They had too many men on the ice. There's no question. It was in the final 2 minutes of the game. So it could be ruled a penalty shot. It wasn't, because again, this is a line change. It's a bad line change. There's nothing intentional about it. That deliberate illegal substitution, which we haven't seen in years, came about long ago when it used to be an extra penalty for putting guys out there, and you'd already have a 5-on-3. So you're already shorthanded. And the coach kept throwing guys out there because another guy goes in the box. But you know, what are you going to do? You can't go less than three guys on the ice. So there was really no penalty in effect for the team that kept putting the extra guy out there. The NHL enacted the rule about a deliberate illegal substitution to prevent that from happening. So if you really want to try to do it, and the intent was to put the extra guy out there for the stoppage, or knowing that there would be a stoppage of play, that the officials can award a penalty shot. Couldn't find the last time that that had been called or that we'd seen a penalty shot for a deliberate illegal substitution. But what we had at Rangers Leafs was really just a bad line change.
And you will never find players or coaches looking for that little advantage or that little loophole. It never stops.
Good stuff, man. Where to work?
Get in the box. It's the Scouting the Refs podcast. Read more at scoutingtherefs.com. Follow Scouting the Refs on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Email the show at heyref@scoutingtherefs.com.
You're good, my book.
Subscribe, share, and keep those sticks down.
That's good play.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.